Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. Today, our special guest is Lance Martin. Lance has been in the real estate business for nearly 30 years as a broker owner of Colwell Banker Town and Country Real Estate, which serves the Inland Empire. Lance is an expert in residential REO sales, has a huge property management business, and hires about 250 agents. Lance, welcome back.
Thank you, Bruce.
We had just touched on financing. Now, one of the things, you know, obviously in 2003 through 2006, we lost our way and said everybody can own something and we're going to be okay with that. And we figured out that's probably not safe. I always felt when we would come back to more aggressive policies, we just talked about that we're still making common sense loans.
Correct.
But do you see any changes, like what happened to the investment market is now there's financing coming from hedge funds.
Right.
There's a very aggressive pile of money that wants that business. They're all raising billions of dollars, and I'm going to feel like there's no place to park it. Eventually, that won't be
right.
Able to accept all that money, because that's not a repeating transaction. Most of the time, they're just going to hold it. And I bet a bunch of it's owned free and clear, and that's the way it's intended. Do you think that world of private money will find its way into the occupant world?
I hope so. And you know, before I jump into that, I want to talk a little bit more when we're wrapping up in the last segment regarding the financing. There's two interesting things that I want to kind of touch base on. The FHA loan limits. I do wish the FHA. I just said I'm really happy with the state of the financing right now.
Right.
I would love nothing more than FHA loan limits to be raised, because that kind of did throw a little bit of a blanket on us. But then another one is, you know, Fannie's got this new 3% down program. I don't believe I've seen anybody use it yet. I may be wrong. I'd have to go back and start looking through these files, but I don't know that I've seen a Fannie 3% down payment program on any of the stuff that we've seen here recently.
That's interesting, because I thought the builders would cheer for that one, because, you know, you're going to build a 3,000 square foot house in South Riverside County. If it was going to have a 3% down buyer, it has to be 355, and now it can be 417. It seemed like that was going to be a big impact.
You would think that would impact that price range. So I don't know. It's interesting. We'll have to see how that plays out in the next quarter or so.
Well, that was another reason why I was really interested in that type of inventory in, let's say, Jacinto or Hemet or whatever, that 2005 or 6 home that was built that can be bought for 210 and have that financing kick in where that's the new homes are going to sell for more than 400 because they have to.
Right.
So it's just odd that, you know, when I saw that, I was like, yes, because
right.
That's going to add some 20% to that price.
And I said the same thing. And so far, maybe it's too early to make that assessment.
Now, is it how different are the credit requirements for Fannie and FHA?
Well, again, and maybe that's part of the challenge. Maybe FHA is more attractive. But like you just said, the FHA loan limits are going to be more restrictive. So I don't know.
I mean,
it's going to be interesting how that shakes out.
If you get a Fannie loaner, is it a lot more demanding as far as credit and ratios?
I believe it's going to be a little tougher.
Okay.
I'm probably not the right guy to ask on that. I'm not doing the loans daily, but I believe the answer to that is you're going to have a little bit more of a challenge from a qualifying standpoint. But on the hedge fund thing, to answer the question you asked, I did a little bit of business with some hedge funds between 2011 and early 13. And most of the folks I was doing business with had this, 2 to 5 year plan. You know, we're going to buy and hold for 2 to 5 years and see what happens. And what I have kind of seen, number one, there are still a few people nibbling at the fringes out there still buying. But I've had some communications recently. It says, okay, well, maybe we've got a piece of a portfolio that maybe we want to put on the market, or we want to do this and we do that. But I think part of the problem is I don't know where they know where to put the money. You know, they've been pretty happy with the returns they've gotten over the last, 24 to 36 months.
Right.
It's like, well, where are you going to take this and get a similar return? So does that ultimately mean there's more, private money flowing into smaller investors? I hope so. Again, I haven't seen it yet, but that's a little closer to your wheelhouse maybe than mine.
Yeah, there's a lot of private financing. there's no doubt that there's those people are fighting over the small niche that that is with multiple billions of dollars of pools.
Right.
Refining people's properties at, say, 6% or 6.5%.
But they're doing onesie-twosies. They're out there.
Well, they weren't. They were doing, okay, well, here's our program. You have to borrow $5 million.
Right.
Then there's a line through that.
Right.
How about $500,000?
Right.
How about one house? Which tells you that they're trying to place money, and it's being much more difficult than they thought.
Right.
So, okay, well, now you've raised all these billions of dollars. To me, the natural target would be, are you safe doing a loan to an occupant that's either a nothing down in the right market or a stated income? I mean, right. There's still big holes in the right. finance world where they could step in and do an awful lot of volume.
That's been the argument for forever. I was listening to, it was Fox News. I think John Stossel did a housing report just this past weekend, and a big part of his argument, if you will, was, you know, government's too involved in the financing, Fannie and Freddie and FHA and all the rest of them. Where's the private money? Why come we don't have private money? And I don't know anything about the Canada market, but he was comparing the U.S. market to Canada and other countries where the vast majority of the financing for homes in Canada apparently is not government-backed. It's okay. private money. And so what you're saying sounds to me like there's a possibility that, you know, we've got some private equity that can come in and I don't know what percentage they could take from Fannie and Freddie. I mean, the percentage of Fannie, Freddie, FHA right now is what? 90?
Yeah,
90%.
Right.
Okay, so what would be a good dent in that? You know, another 5, another 10%?
But it seems like, and I could have been wrong, but we were invited to speak back there. This is several years ago. In front of Fannie Mae's brass, okay? My sense was all of them knew they would not have a job in 10 years. And that was the one thing that shocked me. It's like, wow, you guys really feel like this is not going to be around. And that just seems like I couldn't imagine that. And it probably, maybe it's changing. But I know that they were supposed to reduce their inventory by selling the paper, I guess, 10% a year.
Right.
Okay, but then you go, okay, well, what's next doesn't seem to be appearing.
Right.
So,
but what next is has to be at least in part what you're saying is
right, but
private equity coming in.
But it's not chasing that product right now.
Right.
And if it and you know it's interesting when you see, and as a business guy that owns multiple proper entities in the type in real estate, so you have the brokerage business, all that. Lending business is very much market share, and you get that by creating programs no one else has.
Correct.
And that creates refi business later on. That's, you know, like your property managed business. I'm sure if the only thing you were getting was a management fee, that wouldn't be as exciting as the referral business that you get from all the other activities and stuff.
Absolutely. And that's one of the main reasons I'm in the property management business today. And it's a huge part of our business, and I love it. I suppose if we were never to sell another house, I would be fine with that, but frankly, the property management business feeds the real estate
right.
business.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Tenants become buyers and landlords become sellers, and I happen to work with buyers and sellers.
Yeah, so if you're a lender, I remember driving around in early 2000, and there was a radio ad that said they were going to do 125% loan to value. And I remember thinking, what the heck? But what that did, and for whatever reason they were that aggressive, is that captured market share that they right. were refining for a long time.
Right.
And I think that's what's coming now is there was just a nothing down loan program came out a couple of weeks ago and having to coincide with a government report that delinquencies could go up by 100% and still have no price damage in the market. So I thought, okay, well, we're ready to get more aggressive
right.
in the financing world.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see if that
materializes. And I think we're starting to see some evidence of that. And as the market gets healthier, people will be willing to take more risk.
Sure.
Maybe some of this private equity will jump in and take some of that risk.
The hedge funds, in your opinion, in what way were they market makers and in the purchases they did? Were they really drivers of price? Have they been drivers of rents?
I definitely think they were drivers of price. I don't think there's any doubt of that. You know, my experience was, and I'll never forget the very first client that I had came in and had this conversation, was the first investor ever that came to me. And at the time, I didn't even know if I ever really referred to them or even thought of them as hedge fund. Ultimately, they had hedge fund money. I just thought of them as a larger than average investor. But when they came in and said they were willing to pay retail or 110% of retail, I literally was like, who are you and what are you talking about? I've never had an investor that would come in and say retail, yet alone you are willing to basically overbid on a property. Mm-hmm. But the irony of it was, at the time, if you wanted to buy a property, yeah, you could find maybe an off-market deal and get a good one with a 10 or 20% discount here and there. But if you really wanted to go out and buy a lot of properties, you could not buy a lot of properties unless you were willing to pay retail, because there was 10, 15, 20 offers on everything. So when they came in and said, hey, if the property is worth $100,000, I don't know that we want to offer $110,000 today, but just so you know, we're willing to pay $110,000. It took me months to wrap my head around that. And then when they actually started to do it, I still was like, wow, this is amazing to me. They want a lot of properties, and they obviously were betting on the appreciation side that it was gonna work out in their favor. And hey, guess what? It certainly did.
Yeah.
And from a market mover and from a price moving standpoint, they absolutely impacted the market. I used to use the word artificial a lot. So this is all artificial. I guess it was in many ways, but the pendulum had swung so far back on the downside. Here you buying houses for $60,000 that so many years later you're selling for $240,000. Well, you were smart enough to realize that product was undervalued. A lot of these other hedge funds, Wall Street guys, were just as smart and said, hey, we're willing to take that run. Now, the downside was the average consumer, number one, wasn't able to compete.
They weren't able to get in.
Well, and then for those people who thought, well, I would like to get in, by the time they realized what had happened, property values had gone up, 50, 60, 70%, and now they weren't even able to buy in the neighborhood that they wanted to buy,
right?
Which was also a downside. It's like, oh, well, yeah, I can still afford to buy, but now I have to buy over here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really want to – I'd rather rent over here than buy in this particular market. So the hedge funds definitely drove values. I would say there was at least a good 24-month window in there where they had a huge role in driving up the values. Now, as far as rents are concerned, I don't think they've had hardly any impact on rents.
Just because the availability of renters has been plentiful?
I think in part, but also I think they're terrible property managers.
Okay.
Now, they might be a little self-serving because we do property management. They're better at it today than they were 2 or 3 years ago. But, oh my gosh, I could tell you stories about properties that just sat vacant forever. The houses that were sold that were in beautiful condition. And then 6 months later, when they finally realized that they bought it and they needed to put a tenant in there, they had to go back and, get the grass green again and mm-hmm. turn the pool from green to blue. And, well, the day we closed escrow, the grass was green and the pool was blue. And we could have rented that thing, 3 days later. But there was just so much volume going on that the management of the properties almost seems secondary. Now, again, I think most of them do a much better job today than they did, 3 years ago.
Do you consider that they will be market makers when they exit?
I don't know. I think if the market is continues to show signs of health, which I think it's showing now, I think we're seeing, quarter after quarter, week after week of improvement. I think we'll be okay. I know you and I have had this conversation, or I've heard you say, if they were all to come in and dump at the same time, my concern was, what impact that's going to have, and it's going to be negative. I believe I've heard you say the percentages are so small it would be negligible at best. But as long as interest rates are where they're at and the homeowners are still as confident as they are, I would think we could absorb that inventory without too much challenge.
What's changed in the nature of the seller, let's say, from, 5 years ago to today, as far as they're rebuying or they're migrating out of California? Has there been a kind of a stark change from 5 years ago to now?
The sellers that I'm dealing with today are, most of them are not migrating out. Most of them are staying and purchasing something else. However, I've also seen a fair number, and again, maybe it's skewed because we do so much property management, but we've had a fair number, and I hesitate to put a percentage on it, but I'll put a 10% number on it, of our current property management landlords that have been enticed enough with increased property values in the last year or two that they've come and said, okay, I'm done. Now, you got to remember, most of my landlords are not like your investor landlords. Most of my landlords are people who own one rental, who and maybe were not landlords by choice. They were landlords many years ago by circumstance, you know, divorce, job transfer. And they're not professional landlords. So when the values went down and they held on, these are obviously people I'm still dealing with today, it was tough. I mean, they had the $500,000 house that, you know, then they'd call me up and say, okay, how bad is it this week? So, well, you're down to, you know, 140 today. But they held on. And many of them held on and had mortgages well in excess of what the values were in 2008, 9, and 10. But now they've seen that value not go back to 2006, but they've seen it come back to, you know, 80% of that maybe. Right. And they've said, you know what? We're tired. We've kind of had enough of this. You know, we don't want to deal with another vacancy. We don't want to deal with another, you know, leaky garbage disposal. So I've had a good number of those landlords that have come with very realistic expectations, not looking for pie in the sky prices. Hey, Lance, what's it worth? Mm-hmm. Well, heck, if we list it for, you know, 320 today, it should sell within the next 30, 60 days. And they're listing it for 320 and we're selling it. Now, those folks are taking some of that money. I don't know what they're doing with it. Not a lot of 1031s. I'm not seeing them transferred into other rentals. But again, you got to remember my clientele is not your clientele per se with your investor group.
Not the guy making his living.
Not the guy making the living.
Okay.
But not. I getting to the moving out of the area, I don't know what your charts say, but I'm not seeing that, at least with Inland Empire, you know, sellers. Most of them are moving down the street or, you know, to a bigger, nicer neighborhood.
What about baby boomer sellers? I just, you know, I'm one of them, and I live in a house that's large and like it.
Right.
So is it the nature of the baby boom seller to downsize or not to downsize?
You would think so, but I'm not seeing it.
I'm not seeing it. I didn't think that would happen.
Right.
We've been spoiled our whole life, you know, and I don't know why it's going to end now.
I don't see it. And on the flip side of that, I don't know what you're calling. What do you call the 20-somethings these days? What are they?
The millennials.
The millennials?
Yeah.
Well, they're not buying. You know, at least they're buying in smaller numbers. So, you know, and I look at I've got a 26-year-old and a 22-year-old, and I don't see the one of them getting married anytime soon, and I just don't see them, you know, jumping into families anytime soon, which means the need to maybe be a little more responsible and buy a house and kind of create that homestead, so to speak, seems to be, I don't know, maybe we'll see that when they hit their late 20s or early 30s.
Yeah, you know, I've got Aaron. Now, Aaron's, I think his birthday just was yesterday, 37, 38. So now his friends have done this journey, you know, all the kids he went to school. But honestly, yeah, they're making decisions at 36 and 37 that I made at 20.
Right. Well, I was married at 20 and owned my first house at 20.
Right.
And by the time I was my son's age, I had bought and sold a couple houses and moved a couple times and had two kids.
Yeah.
So I was participating in the economy and they're not.
Now, just in general, you know, it's interesting because I think that's a big part of it is that the average age of getting married is at least 6 or 8 years later. And that's where a lot of those decisions have to kick in.
Right.
I have to have stability. I have to stick around an area. That's one of the big things for that generation is they want to be mobile.
Right. Well, and then on top of that, and again, I have no evidence to justify this other than just my own feeling. A lot of those you know, millennials, 25-year-old buyers or potential buyers, well, let's face it, maybe they started paying attention to real estate in 2007 and 8 and 9 and 10, and they don't have that same, you know, confidence level. They've been, hey, maybe we need to be a little bit more careful before. I mean, when I bought my first house, it was 1987. Actually, I got married, bought my first house, and started selling real estate within 3 months of each other. And assumed, we talked about it at one of the seminars, an FHA assumable loan.
Right.
Subject to.
Basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the real estate market was the real estate market. There wasn't ever a thought of values going down. It made sense. It was, you know, it was comparable or better than rent. And it was just an easy decision. Now I think maybe there are a few of those, you know, 20-somethings that say, all right, well, let's be careful here. You know, I watched what happened to my parents. I saw my mom and dad go through the foreclosure.
Yeah.
I saw
the values
the marketplace.
Go down by
I've
half.
Seen the values go down by half.
You know, I really think that's the one chart I can't make up because I don't have a history of it, but right. I know, and it's interesting. I don't know how to put a number to it. Let's say if the Great Depression weighed this much, right. what did the Great Recession weigh? But to the participant, just what, like you were saying, the 90s felt pretty bad until you got to the 2008s.
Yep.
We felt pretty bad about the 90s.
Yeah.
And I think the people that went through the 08 through 2011 has almost the same impact on this little world of ours, real estate, as the Great Depression did. I know we didn't 25% unemployment, but we did have 50% decline in values or
yep.
more.
Yep.
And if you were sitting there thinking you lived in a 500 grand house and owed 400 and it went to 200,
yep.
that was very impactful.
Yep.
And I guess if you're, you know, you could see if you're 20 years old living through that and now you've got a master's degree, you'd have pause maybe to go, I don't know if I ever want to own
it
this
It may
thing.
Be, but the one thing that everybody needs to realize, including those 20-somethings, is we have interest rates below 4%.
Yeah, see, that's
and
the steal of the century.
If there's anything out there that's hesitating or causing anybody to hesitate to go out and engage in the real estate market and go out and buy a house, that in itself should be, okay, whatever fear I have, let's put that aside. Let's be smart. Let's do our due diligence. But my God, it's time to get out and engage in this market and buy some houses. I mean, I just, it's unbelievable to me that we have had, forget about sub 4, it's unbelievable that we have had sub 5% interest rates since, interest rates have been below 5% now for what? Four,
6 years?
Five, I was going to say four, but yeah, I guess it's six.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Well, the other thing is we get complacent about the speed of change. So, yeah, Fed fund rate hasn't changed for 6 years, and we're used to that being normal. The year I got in the business, Fed fund rate changed 21 times
right.
that year.
Right.
So, you know, we're complacent about, okay, it's always going to be this way. Well, no. And that, to me, that is the biggest mistake. I mean, bragging rights would be not attached to what you paid for the property, but the fact that you have a 3% mortgage
That's
on
right.
your house.
Right.
Someday you're going to say that, and your neighbor's going to go, oh, my God.
Well, it sounds funny, and it sounds very salesman-esque, but it's so true. It's not about price. It's about payment.
Yeah.
So don't worry so much. If values go up, hey, that's fantastic. If values pull back 5 or 10%, whatever it happens to be, that's fine. If it's a house you like, it's a neighborhood you want, and you can afford that payment with a 3.75% interest rate, or even a 4, or even God forbid, a 4.75% interest rate, buy the house. I mean, because at some point, right? At some point, we're gonna be north of where we are today.
Yeah, that would be for sure. Rates when you were starting was what, 10-ish?
Well, I think it was double digits. It was 87. I can remember. Somebody saying we're never going to see single-digit interest
sure.
rates.
Yeah.
Who was the Fed chair at that time? It was Reagan was president, and I can't remember. It's escaping me who it was.
Volcker? No, that was after Volcker.
Yeah, it wasn't Volcker, but anyway, it doesn't matter.
Greenspan?
I think Greenspan came in after. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
So somebody on the show can look it up. But I can remember my broker, my first broker at the time, and I think we were at, you know, 11%, and it might have gone down to 10.5 or something like that. And I remember him standing up at a sales meeting saying, well, okay, well, this is great, but, you know, don't expect to see single-digit interest rates. You know, tell everybody now that this is good because they're going to run back up and we're going to be, you know, back at 11 or 12%. But I don't know. Who would ever would have thought we'd be at sub 3 or sub 4%? Or God forbid, sub 3. I mean, who knows? We might be sub 3% interest rates if things keep going where they're at.
It's interesting. But, that's crazy. It is crazy.
Having
studied that with back in Washington, went back there and looked at the newspapers for 100 years just
right.
to see interest rates. That was pretty crazy. Last minute, the recovery from a foreclosure or a short sale credit-wise or being able to be lent to,
right.
what's the duration after a short sale and a foreclosure?
You know, I probably should know this a little bit more definitive than I do. 2 to 3 year window.
Okay, and that's improved. It used to be more.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, that seems like the further we've gotten away from the really bad times, we kind of got more reasonable with the reentry.
You would have thought, and I thought at some point, you know, the government was going to come in and give everybody a mulligan and just say, it's okay, you know, we'll write that one off. But that hasn't happened, so.
That's a good term, yeah. Can we have one foreclosure mulligan, please? Especially since property values went down so much. All right, well, Lance, go ahead and give your website again.
It's www.cbtownandcountry.com.
And the services that you provide, are you list and sell properties and property management?
Traditional single family sales, property management. We do a little bit of commercial as well.
Okay.
And escrow services.
And escrow service.
Okay. You got it.
All right. Lance, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.